Welcome to Not Home Alone, a podcast from the family ministry at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. I'm your host, Stephanie Drum, and I'm the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. My co-hosts for this series will be our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. In this series on parenting, we're looking at the love and logic technique, which helps you understand various skills you can use to foster security, independence, and love in your children. Everyone, welcome back to Not Home Alone. This is episode 3, and we are going to be talking about two more of the skills that we've been doing for the past few episodes. I am joined with our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. Say hi.
Hello.
And one of our guests with us, who is Andrea Zimmerman. They are joining us together.
Hey.
We're so glad that you're joining us.
And I'm married to Andrea. This isn't an Abraham and Sarah thing.
They're a unit.
Yes.
Joined together. So, yeah, but it's actually nice to have kind of a both parents' perspective on this too. So, yeah, definitely glad to hear from both of you. And Neil has a little bit of a different perspective because he currently has a toddler and a newborn. So.
Yeah, congrats, Neil. Way to go.
The first two episodes,
you were a father of one. Now you're a father of two in the trenches getting pummeled by tiny people.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. We're not quite outnumbered yet, so there's that.
Well, there's always time. Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Just wait till you start potty training. You're always outnumbered when you start potty training.
That's right, yes. That's right.
All right. Well, we're going to be looking at skill number 4 and 5 today. You can go back and listen to our previous episodes to hear some of the first 3 skills and a little bit more about love and logic. But skill number 4 that we're talking about is choices within limits. So we want to give children choices. But they're not just any choice. It's a bit of a closed set. You know, we're giving A, B, or C, or maybe A and B, but not just to fill in the blank. So everybody really likes choices. I like choices. You kind of have, like, on the one hand, you have banana, and on the other hand, you have kiwi. You have goldfish or Cheez-Its. And I'm going to go ahead on the record and say the answer to that is Cheez-Its. Always.
That would be our children love both salty, cheesy snacks.
Well,
I don't know.
The youth have talked about this a lot and I kind of bring down the hammer, but you know, I've to each his own, but,
Cheez-Its are
anyway,
better.
So thank you, Neil. I'm just kidding. All right. So, you know, any choice, people like making choices. And so this is something that we can offer to children as well. And so the driving power behind this skill is that parents are getting to avoid a little bit of a power struggle by offering options before the child has a chance to resist. And so, you know, everybody kind of needs to have a little bit of control. Everybody wants control. Sometimes control is talked about in a negative way, but we all need it a little bit. And so that is kind of what this is talking about. So love and logic would say that you share the control you don't need so that you can maintain the control that you do need.
Ooh, say that again. That is so good.
Absolutely. You share the control you don't need so that you can maintain the control you do. Mm. And so I'll give a little bit of do's and don'ts, but I mean, I don't know if y'all have any initial thoughts about this skill. I think it's a pretty good one I found.
Well, Andrea had a great example when we were doing our pre-show convo about
footwear. Tell us your example.
Because I can tell you that for a long time as parents, and this is a common struggle, you tell a child, put your shoes on, and then there ensues like a 30-minute debate about whether or not to put the shoes on or not. So what was the choice that you mentioned, Andrea?
Yeah. And this goes for any article of clothing. Right now you might be thinking about outerwear in particular. But yeah, shoes, we don't say put your shoes on. We say, would you like to wear your sandals or your sneakers or your, you know, whatever your options are. So then they can have control within that, but you're not giving them the option not to put shoes on.
Right. It's the assumption you will be wearing shoes. I'm not giving you the option to not wear shoes. You will do either this one or that one. Right.
Yeah. So the thing that, you know, as you said, Stephanie, share the control you don't need so you can maintain the control that you do. You actually don't care whether they wear the red shoes or the blue shoes. Mm-hmm. So you're giving away that piece of control, like put on these shoes. And you give them some control, which, you know, as you said, is such a powerful human need. Like the reason the child refuses to put on her shoes is not because she likes having cold toes. It's because just the statement, put on your shoes, is an invitation to a power struggle, because now you've taken all their control, and kids are designed to resist that. Like that's their whole purpose of life. Like what'd you say, Neil, your sweet angelic child said to you the other day?
Oh, yes. Oh, I was getting onto her. She's 2.5, by the way. And she looked at me and wagged her finger and said, "Daddy, stop talking to me." I don't think there were any consequences for the action because I was so surprised by what happened. It was just like, you know, it was just so shocked that like we went from cuddly baby to this.
Yeah. Yeah, as her brain develops and her inherent need for control comes out. But yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. Like kids just love to try to push against the boundaries and take control. So if you say put your shoes on or put your jacket on, it's cold outside. Like this is – they're not rational. They just want to resist and kind of take control back. So if you give them two options, they sort of think that they're in control. And you are giving them some control, but you're giving away the control.
You're giving them creative control.
Yeah, with two options that you're okay with either one.
You're respecting their agency as humans, and part of the long goal of this skill that I think is brilliant is that part of being an adult is making a lot of choices, right? And having to have that authority to make choices and the confidence to make choices. And if you like set a kid up to resist you and there's never any options or they don't have any choice, that's not helpful skill for life in making a bunch of choices that we all have to do.
Right. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, so Stephanie, you had some do's here, things to do and do not do.
There's a few do's and don'ts. And one of the big ones I think that is a key for this skill is that you do almost all of these options when things are going well. So this is almost a preemptive skill. This isn't really all... Most of this is not intended to be a conflict resolution sort of thing. I mean, it can get to that, but most of this is when things are going well, you say, "Hey, do you want to wear your sandals or your tennis shoes?" And then that kind of gets them in the mentality ahead of time before, or especially if you know that maybe your child struggles to, like, you know, they're going to go to their friend's house and they don't want to leave. You may know that ahead of time, and so you can preemptively say, "Hey, do you want to do A or do you want to do B?" to kind of make it a little bit of a more fun activity or an assumption that something is going to happen to take their mind off of this maybe feeling of I'm leaving my friend or whatever it is, right? If we have to leave the park, what song do you want to listen to in the car? Do you want to listen to this song or do you want to listen to that song? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of redirecting them a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Redirecting their, so then they feel like they can have control in another situation by choosing between those two things. And I think in a lot of ways you're training them, but, you know, especially by capitalizing on the choices when it's, when things are going well. I mean, you're training them. And I don't really want to compare children to dogs, but sometimes, sometimes it kind of looks similar. If you create the expectation that when they're given these choices, then they respond within those choices, and that's just what happens, then you're not going to have as much pushback later on.
Yeah, it's like that positive reinforcement, you know.
I think. Or one of the other things you said about the practical examples, like the leaving a friend's house or leaving any place that a kid enjoys, like the park, you said, you know, giving a choice, like, do you want to leave now or do you want to leave in 5 minutes? You've given them some agency. You've made it clear that
5 minutes is a long time.
2 minutes, 1 minute, whatever. Yeah, 5 minutes, maybe forever. But the interesting thing that's happened then is that then if they say, well, because they're obviously going to say, I want to leave in 2 minutes or whatever the extended time is. And so, but that's then the decision that they've made. It's not you standing as a parent saying, okay, time to leave. It's they've made a choice that they want to leave in 2 minutes. And so, oh, it's been 2 minutes. Let's go to the car. And right. So that's the decision that they've made. And I think, to Andrew's point, yes, this trains the kids, but if a parent starts doing this, it almost begins to train the parent to begin to think ahead and to sort of see the iceberg before you hit it. Like train yourself to not say, it's time to leave or time to put your shoes on, but to realize that that will be a power struggle. And so it retrains the parent to think to himself or herself, you know, I need to offer a choice here and make it a thing where the child gets some control, give away some of the control that I don't really care about to maintain the control that I do.
And in this, another one of those do's is that these two options need to be both things that you like or are okay with. So don't give one of the options as something that you're not okay with doing, or
it's not
them
a trick.
Doing, I should say. Yeah, it's not a trick. And, you know, if they choose one of those options, you have to be okay with it. So that's one of those. And then the last thing to do on this is if they pick something that you didn't offer, if they kind of come up with their own option, or they don't respond in some kind of timely manner, then you choose for them.
And that might involve the uh-oh song.
That might involve the uh-oh song that we've talked about in previous episodes of uh-oh, time's up, or, so you know, sad. Whatever. So sad. Like, that's not one of the things we said. So I'm going to go with this jacket we're wearing because we're going out the door. So, you know, those sorts of things are important for them to choose. But if at the end of the day, if they can't or don't, then you get the final word on that.
Stephanie,
the natural consequences come in. I think we talked about the last episode, and you know, since we're talking about shoes and jackets right now, I have a great example from a child who is in preschool who shall remain nameless. And we lived in a very cold climate, and the getting shoes and jackets on were a struggle in the morning. So shoes have to be worn to school, right? You can't go to school without shoes on. So that's a non-negotiable. So that has to be, you know, whatever shoes they wanted to wear, or, you know, they give them a choice for that. But in this situation, the child did not want to wear a coat. And I mean, we're talking like northern winter here. So, I let the child go to school without a coat on because,
oh man,
you know, I don't know anything. So, but what happened was, you know, they couldn't go out to recess because they didn't have a coat. They were cold.
Right.
They, you know, they felt kind of dumb because all the other kids were all bundled up. And so, that happened one time, and after that, the child gladly put on their coat to go to school, and there was no more struggle. Right. So, you know.
There is a great Atlantic article, by the way, called The Boys Who Wear Shorts All Winter. Mm-hmm. It is a noted phenomenon, and I'm sure you weren't saying it was a young boy, of your children, but it is a noted thing that boys refusing to wear long pants in the winter for whatever reason.
I need to look up that article right now, actually.
I've noticed that.
I went to college with a guy from Idaho, and he wore, and this is in Boston, and he wore shorts all winter long. And even today, it's like cold in Texas today. It's like 45 degrees this morning, and our sons were wearing shorts and t-shirts this morning. So
all week they've been wearing shorts and t-shirts.
Yeah. But we're not fighting them on it. But yeah, like you said, like you let this child experience the consequences. I'm horrified that you were so you know, cold to this child. I can't believe I'm just now hearing this.
You were like, that was brilliant.
It is brilliant. Yeah, because the thing is, you want the kid to understand the why. Like, this isn't some arbitrary wear a coat, mean parent deal. Like, there's a reason why. But even if you use the drill sergeant model, again, going back to that first episode, that kind of style of parenting, you might be able to get the child to put a coat on. And then as soon as he or she is out of your sight, that coat is coming off. And so, and then it becomes like a point that I'm going to prove. But, you know, if you don't get into the power struggle and say, okay, you've made the choice not to wear a coat, then they get to live with those consequences. And like you said, it only happened once.
Yeah, and they were safe. I mean, I wouldn't have done that if, like, they were walking to school. I mean, I knew that the child would be safe. They weren't going to get frostbite. They would be uncomfortable, but not like truly suffer. So,
totally.
You know, it was a very safe way to learn a lesson,
right,
on their own.
And so, I think we kind of mentioned this with the consequences conversation, but if that weren't an option for him to go, him or her to go without a jacket, if that were not on the table at all, then I feel like there's some kind of creative consequence that, you know, parents can always find. So you choose from the choices that you are okay with.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if the child wants to go play outside and it's cold, you know, that's a situation. If it's like there's snow on the ground, that's a situation where you would say, I'm happy to let you go outside once you have a jacket on. I'm happy to have children play outside once they're right, appropriately dressed, and just leave it at that. And then they can figure that out. And we'll talk about that later, because that's skill number five. I'm getting ahead of us.
All right. So let me continue on. So whenever...
Do the don'ts. I love your don't list.
Oh, yeah. So the don'ts is that you ought not, we ought to be careful to not disguise threats as choices.
Would you like to have your broccoli or go to the basement for an hour?
Yeah, exactly. So no threats, no like fake or disguised threats.
You do this or else, as or though the else was an actual choice.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, this is in the same vein, but you don't deliver these with sarcasm or anger, because that's not a real choice that you're offering. Because kids pick up on that pretty quickly, that, I'm going to make mom mad, so I can't choose this one. If I choose B, that she's going to get really angry. That's not a real choice. So those are a few tips to not do with this skill.
When I was in middle school in East Texas, they still paddled kids in school.
Oof.
And the coaches, if you got a low behavior grade, you would get paddled. And they gave you a choice, though, and the choice was you could run the cross-country course every day for a month or get two licks. And it was such a clear non-choice,
sure,
right? Yes. Like, obviously, you would take the two licks and get it over with. That's an example of not a real choice. Like, they were directing you towards one option.
Two terrible options. One is really terrible, and one is only a little bit terrible.
Both sort of threats, but
they were both threats.
Yeah, for sure.
Neil, did you feel empowered by that decision making they gave you?
No, there was not a lot of power. A lot of fear and trembling.
Which form of abuse would you like? You know, that's not what we're talking about here. Sorry, East Texas parents.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. So they kind of help a little bit with parents when they say, when things aren't going well, that you could say something like, who's been getting to decide just about everything around here? You have. But now it's my turn. So I need you to do this and this and this. So in the event that this is kind of going down the drain, or the situation is going down the drain a little bit, you bring it back to the choices and say, hey, you've been making the choices for the past 15 minutes or however, whatever. Now it's going to be my turn to make choices, and I need you to unload the dishwasher. But like I said, most of the options that you give ought to be happening when things are normal and fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this kind of sounds to me something like, you know, I've given you a lot of options for a lot of things. You know, a lot of decisions that you can make, but this for this situation, I'm going to decide. Is that kind of what you're
saying? I think so. I think that's what it's getting at.
Yeah. So this is a great time for parents, I think, to decide what battles you want to, like, pick your battles. And, you know, this one situation comes to mind. So one thing that I do is I kind of – my kids can have pretty much free rein with what they want to wear as long as it's within dress code at school. And I don't ever tell them what to wear. Although Sundays – I can veto what they wear. So if we have plaids and polka dots or two different kinds of plaids or sports shirts or whatever, the combination, it doesn't happen so much anymore. But I have veto power and like they don't get to decide on church days.
Right.
Because we just don't want to give people any more to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. But, that makes sense.
So, and that goes for shoes too. I get to veto shoe choices. But they even get to pick what they want to wear for picture day, which is really funny.
So, oh, I can imagine.
We have some fun school picture dress choices.
So, yeah. So like we were saying earlier, if parents can kind of anticipate some of these situations coming up, then there won't be as much of a chance for children to argue and you get to set the tone.
Andrea, it sounds like you have a sense of priorities too. Like you said, picking battles, like the priority is that you're decently arrayed. What that looks like doesn't matter except for Sundays. And even then you just have veto control.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't, you know, if sometimes children don't have the best sense of what fits, you know, or
I'm with
I love
you.
That's so you understated. Know, I love the way you said that.
We just want to keep things. And people might be surprised to hear this because of, you know, what we look like sometimes on Sunday mornings, but
it could be worse.
You know, it could be worse. Yeah. But yeah, you have to decide what your priorities are. And, like you said, and you know, that goes for a number of things. So with meal times, you know, you have to decide, is that a priority time for you? Like, you know, what if it's not a big deal to you to make a couple different meals for a kid, then that's totally up to you. For me, it was not. One of my priorities is to do as little work as possible. And so that goes with cooking, and I was not going to make, you know, two different meals for, because children. And so like that situation, the mealtime situation, I would sort of craft. So I didn't have that. So that battle didn't really come into play. And, by doing some of these preemptive things.
Yeah, like, you know, we always had the – because I think food and clothing are often some of the big battles with kids. And I think with the food part for us, it was always this is what's for dinner. And we're happy to give dessert to anybody who finishes their dinner, for example. But obviously if you haven't finished your dinner, you must not be hungry anymore. So, you know, that's kind of how we framed it. But there was not – we didn't do like this is dinner A or you can choose dinner B. But it was – just this is what's for dinner. So again, the choices within limits and then being able to just stick with what you said, you know, keeping your word.
So we can go ahead and wrap this skill up. And I think, you know, I think of times of the day, like getting ready for bed when kids are kind of naturally, they're almost always going to be defiant about it. And so like, do you want to brush your teeth first or do you want to put your pajamas on? And, those things can kind of help a little bit.
Yeah, I love – you've got some great examples here. Do you want to skip to the car or do you want a piggyback ride? And what I love about that is you've totally taken – like you've actually made it fun. Those are two fun options. Hopefully you're strong enough to carry your child on your back. Don't suggest this if you cannot. But and you've totally removed the like power thing about get in the car. Like that's not even there. It's like which fun thing do you – way do you want to go to the car?
Yeah.
And with these examples that you gave about getting to the car and – you know, one thing that we did, our kids, it became so easy for them to go to bed, because we trained them doing some of these things. So, first one to the room gets to pick out the nighttime story.
Cool. I like that.
You kind of
a key dramatic moment in the night. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Nighttime stories. I mean, they love that. What kid doesn't like their nighttime stories? And, and building, having a routine like that where they know that that's the expectation and they know they have to get ready in order to have that special time. It really does become pretty easy, and you don't have to work so hard at it, and you don't even have to give them choices eventually, because then they know the routine and they know what's expected of them. And you don't have to keep doing the choices, because they just do it automatically.
Right.
I'm envisioning the situation. One of these examples you wrote, Stephanie, is, can you stay with us and stop that behavior, or do you need to leave for a little while? And I'm just thinking about, like, you know, you've got people over and your child has come up to you and is like, daddy, 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 daddy. You know, while you're trying to have a conversation, for example, can you stay here with us and wait till I'm done talking and then you can ask me a question? Or do you need to go, you know, play in your room for a while? Again, those are two options that are acceptable options, and you haven't just like cut them
off. For Elizabeth, yeah. Something that works really well is, at dinner, we'll be like, if she's squirrely, getting into things, making a mess, say, do you want to stay here and eat dinner, or would you like to go sit and quietly in your room? And I just say, sit quietly in your room, and she like shapes up immediately. I've only had to take her to her room once, and it was like the worst thing that had ever happened to her. And it really works. And we're giving her like, I'm happy to take you to your room. It's really two choices that you have. But it's been very helpful.
Offering a 2-year-old to sit quietly in their room sounds like a nightmare.
A room that's filled with toys. Let's be clear.
It's full of toys and books.
It's an option.
It is an option. All right. But our next skill is building off of this and building off of things we've talked about in the past, which is using enforceable statements, or setting limits with enforceable statements.
Numero cinco. So,
absolutely. Skill number 5. And so it goes back to what we've talked about, I think in the first episode, about keeping our word. And if we can kind of go through a whole day where we keep our word. And, the point behind this is it is, again, the setting limits, especially that we've talked about in skill number 4, but also in previous episodes. And so instead of saying, stop that, where you know the answer is going to be, well, you can't make me, we kind of bypass that power struggle a little bit. And so instead, the format that Love and Logic gives for this skill is that you will say, I'll allow blank as long as it doesn't cause a problem. So whatever that, whatever the situation is, you can play at your friend's house tonight as long as it doesn't cause a problem. Or there's a lot of different, iterations of this. But so you're going to describe what you will do. This is something that you will do, not necessarily something that they will do, right? So you're allowing them to play at their friend's house as long as everything is fine. So an example of this is I will allow you to play video games as long as it doesn't cause a problem. I'll allow you to drive my car as long as it doesn't cause a problem. as long as there's no hitting, you can play, in the ball pit at McDonald's, which should not be happening during COVID, but that's beside the point.
It might not should be happening at any time. That place is a cesspool.
Maybe
it
shouldn't be happening any time.
COVID originated.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where it started.
Ball pit.
The ball pit at McDonald's. It was literally the first thing that came to mind.
In Wuhan.
But, whatever that thing is, One of the examples they give is breakfast is served for the next 15 minutes. And that's something that you can control. This is a limit that is something that you are doing yourself. So I think this is something that I think something to think about ahead of time, that you are prepared as a parent to be consistent in this. And we were talking a little bit about that earlier and making sure that you are consistent and not to be discouraged if it doesn't happen the first time, especially with like really little kids. Neil, you were kind of mentioning something about that before, but you know, the first time you do this with a 2-year-old, they may be like, well, yeah, I'm not going to pick up all my toys. And what are you going to do about it? But you know, the more that you do this, they get the idea.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so this skill, setting limits with enforceable statements, I think the key here is that they are enforceable, that they're things that you can do. Right. It's not a vague threat. Clean your room or there'll be trouble, you know. Like, what does that mean? That just means you're going to be angry, which you already are, and, you know, as long as I can just ignore you, then I don't have to clean my room. So those kinds of just drill sergeant statements – actually give the kid a lot of power, because you're making the relationship all about power, and you said do this, and then all they have to do is say no, I won't. But if you say what you will allow, again, thinking ahead a little bit, retraining yourself as a parent to say, like you said, breakfast is served for the next 15 minutes, or once the living room is clean, we can watch a movie, and you know, I'm happy to do that. Or I'm happy for you to drive my car as long as, you know, it's returned with a full tank of gas or something, like, you know, as long as I don't have to adjust the seat for 15 minutes and refill the gas tank every time, or throw out your trash if you, you know. So I'm happy to allow you to drive my car if these things are done. So again, it's not a power struggle, which by definition you almost can't win. Even if you win, you sort of lost, because you don't have that relationship. And I think just thinking through what are the limits and keeping that enforceable. And like you said, if you have not been using these kinds of skills, if you've been either more just like, they never listen, so I let them do what they want, or I'm yelling orders all the time and they still never listen, so I'm just even going to be even more of a drill sergeant. And if you start doing these kinds of things, like, and you have to be like the stealth bomber. You can't really let them see you coming. You have to be like just super chill about it. Like, I'm happy to watch a movie at 6 o'clock, you know, when the living room is clean and your toys are put away. And then you just drop that, don't say it again, and just leave the room. And then come back in at 6 o'clock. And I guarantee you, the first time you try this, the room will not be clean unless you have some odd child that's oddly compliant. But that's then an enforceable limit that you can now say, oh, it's 6 o'clock, so sad, the Transformers are still everywhere. Well, maybe we can try again tomorrow. Now, would you like to brush your teeth or take a bath first before we go to bed? See, look what I did. I combined skill number 4 and skill number 5 with the choices and the enforceable limits. But there will be times where if you say, I'll allow blank when this and this and this happens, like, there will be times when they won't do the thing and you'll have to enforce the limits. But again, that's part of the learning process, which is what life will teach your children eventually, even if you don't. So you might as well start now while the stakes are low.
And like you were saying, it also goes hand in hand with delayed consequences that we talked about last time, because the Transformers are still on the floor.
Right.
So, you know, that they kind of build off of each other a little bit, and now the room is still dirty. So what is, you know, how do we take care of that situation and not watch a movie? And
so here's a little nugget for those Transformers still on the floor. And they will still be on the floor, and you're going to want to not step on the Transformers or the Legos or the doll, whatever stuff is on the floor. And it is time for them to go to bed. So maybe you're going to have to pick it up as the parent, and maybe a trash bag will come out and those toys will go into the trash bag. And there are a couple options of what to do with the trash bag. It can go in the trash, or it can be put away until those toys are earned back by doing other chores. So, and all of a sudden you have an economy created.
Right.
Because you have all those toys, which are valuable. So maybe the kids could buy them back if they had money, or they maybe they have to, you know, work to get those toys back and
do some chores.
You can get real creative. Yeah. When you have to do, you know, their work for them because, you know, they're refusing and ultimately you need those toys off the floor for safety and sanity. And, okay, well you can do that, but there will be, you know, there are going to be consequences, for the parent having to spend their time doing something that the child should have done.
Right. And this again, whereas like, so when you put so the child goes to bed, the transformer's on the floor. So mom or dad comes downstairs then and puts everything in a trash bag. And then when the child wakes up the next morning, you can say, you know, so sad last night. I needed to pick up all the toys because I don't want to step on them. It'd be really dangerous for, you know, me and your mom or me and your dad or whatever. And so, and so that was a lot of work for me. And you can now earn back these toys with each chore you do. I'm happy to give you one thing. And again, keeping that tone level, showing empathy for the child, like realizing that this does sort of suck for them, and not being sarcastic, and this isn't a threat, this isn't a punishment, this is a consequence. Again, this is a natural consequence. They left the stuff out, you had to pick it up, and now they can earn it back. Which again, if you this is a real world thing. Like if you, like in a grown up version of this, maybe like you leave your keys in the ignition or you forget to lock your car, like your car will get robbed or your car will get stolen. Like that sort of absent-minded, right, just leaving things, like there will be consequences. So again, you're doing your child a favor by letting them experience some very small negative consequences now, as opposed to, you know, when they're 32.
And they're at a job and they don't do their work and the boss has to do the work for them. I mean, that creates another, let's let these kids learn these lessons when they're young, so they don't have to learn it when they have a job and there are bigger consequences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's one here that I use a lot actually in management, just with Neil. You can play with that as long as there's no hitting. Neil has a tendency to bite and hit a lot, and I just have to kind of rein him in. So, but it's been effective, wouldn't you say, Neil?
At least I don't chew on the toys like the toddler.
We can use the incense as long as there's no hitting.
As long as we clean up afterwards. Yeah.
Don't burn down the church.
Well, I think that's probably going to do it for us. I think that's a solid stopping point. I'd like to remind you that we do have an email address for Not Home Alone, which is just NotHomeAlone@StAlbansWaco.org. You can send us your questions or any other thoughts that you have, and we'd love to hear from you. So we will see you next time. Y'all say bye.
Bye.
Bye.